think I might get that on a t-shirt.
California.
Coming to you live every day, talking about HR with the folks that actually care and know a little bit about it. So we can get to our guests as quickly as possible because we need to talk about hope and change. And by change, we do mean quarters and dimes and nickels. So just for clarity there. John Sumpter, happy new year and welcome to Drive Through HR.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
God, if I got any better. Crazy.
So what was that tune at the beginning of the show? What was the tune?
William?
California Love, Dr. Dre, Tupac.
You know, Tupac went to my kid's high school.
It's a little, it's a West Coast versus East Coast. That would be a classic rendition of the West Coast responding to some of the East Coast. But yes, that's Dr. Dre and Tupac, California Love.
Well, that was a great tune.
We need some Midwest representation there just to stir it up a little bit.
Third Coast. Well, Brian, the closest you got is you got the Dirty South. Guys out of the ATL, you got a nice little movement there. That's about all you get, though. You've got the L.A., you've got New York, and then you've got Atlanta. That's Chicago, if you want to call that a kind of a music scene, a hip-hop music scene as well. But that's about it, man. They come out of the epicenters.
Well, Wichita, Kansas, you need to be stepping up your game, getting some Midwest roll. So I just can't even hardly fake it. I'm trying. 2014, I'll be conversational about this. I promise. That's one of my goals.
I double dare you.
John,
really?
Seriously, two pack, maybe three pack. We'll make that happen. So, John, introduce yourself and to our lovely family of listeners, and let's dig into some real meaty topics here. I hope and change.
Okay. Well, I'm John Sumpter, and I am the editor of the HR Examiner, which if you are not subscribed to it, you should subscribe. HRExaminer.com every day except over holidays. We publish something that will give you a reason to reconsider some of your ideas about HR. We try to work on the edge of things in HR. So I do that. And I also run a consulting company called Two Color Hat and occasionally do some projects with Mr. Tin Cup on this show. And in our work together, we help companies get good at articulating why their customers should buy from them. But the core of my work is looking at the future of HR and where and why that might be. So I'm always optimistic and hopeful. The beginning of the year is as good an excuse as any. Where do you want to sprinkle hope, Brian?
Let's talk a little bit about 2013 as you look back. What are some of the posts that got the most traction? I mean, you look at the content calendar, a lot of things were thrown against the wall. Where do you think that the most attention was paid, either rightfully or wrongfully? And then let's look at 2014 and what do you think will be similar or different about 2014?
So the stuff that really worked, there's two piles at the HR Examiner. Pile one is my work, which is probably about 60% of what goes out in the HR Examiner, and pile two is the work of our editorial advisory board, who are about 25 wizened HR pros. We refer to it as a fistful of wisdom and experience. And in my stuff, the topics that were big were, how do you make sense out of all the talk about big data? Where's data going, and what's HR's role becoming in terms of data? There was a fairly constant drumbeat of enthusiasm for ideas about quantifying employment branding and how you tell how to behave in an employment marketplace, given that it's the 21st century. I guess the other big pieces had to do with the future of HR technology, which I think is a very interesting open story, but most of the things that we have focused on for the last 15 years are finished, and so there's this sense that the HR technology industry is looking for its next battlefield. So those are the big ones there. Interestingly, Heather Bussing, who is our employment lawyer, writes more a kind of a more authentic analytical form, and she has been the biggest draw in the newsletter over the course of the last year, and it's quite astonishing because it's a kind of a philosophical balance against the drumbeat of tech and conversation about what you can do with tech. And I think that's where, in 2014, we're going to see some pretty interesting things shape up, but right in the middle of those two dynamics.
So it's January of 15, looking backwards. What got the most traction in Aught14?
Well, people started to notice two things in Aught14. They started to notice that with all of the automation, there's nothing about people in HR tech. So we've automated all sorts of stuff about jobs and what you do with jobs and how you grade performance in jobs and how you fill jobs and how you move jobs, but nothing about Brian likes water polo, or William is really good at discerning the difference between brands of bourbon. None of the stuff that makes people ever made it into the software that's supposed to help us manage people. So you have this odd thing where what HR is really good at, managing people, isn't reflected in the technology. And I think we're going to start to notice that, and we're going to start to really come to terms with how do you manage that problem? How do you manage what HR people actually do instead of this junk about fitting jobs and performance and jobs and that sort of stuff into a computer?
If you were to do the same thing in technology, January 2015, we're looking back, what got the most attention, not necessarily a particular vendor, but just, you know, what kind of sprang out of nowhere or what type of topics were the most interesting, et cetera, from a pure tech perspective?
So this is the 2014 is going to be all about what happens when you introduce wearable computing into the office. You know, there will be the drumbeat of affordable healthcare, and in practice, what HR people are going to be dealing with lots and lots of their time in 2014 is affordable healthcare. But what will turn up in the blogs and turn up in the press are the various stories of sexual harassment being recorded with Google Glass, or trying to figure out how to have policies about where and when you can record and not record, or whose data is it? Those sorts of questions that have to do with the fact that the computer started out as something that took up a building the size of a block, and now it's something that you have in your pocket, and it's getting smaller and smaller still. And so the way that we think about using them is changing, and HR is the front lines in the battle for rethinking how we use computing in the workplace.
So if you could wave your magic wand and kill off some things, what would you like to kill off? Not necessarily people, of course, but just concepts.
Oh,
man,
I thought maybe the Midwest, you know, I understand that hiring a hitman in Tulsa is a lot cheaper than it is out here.
I'm looking at you, Jimmy.
So I'm in the middle of a really interesting conversation with a guy named Ed Newman, who I'm almost going to bet you've had on the show. And Ed Newman is the vice president of really smart stuff for a company called iMomentis, and they're a mobile recruiting company. And in the next week or so in the HR Examiner, Ed and I are going to have a debate about mobile technology. And as I understand it, since about 2003, people have been saying, this is the year where mobile recruiting is really going to take off. And it hasn't. And it hasn't for a variety of reasons, probably the biggest of which is that because companies were being cheap in the beginning of the Depression, we now have a policy called bring your own device. And bring your own device means that the IT department has lost control of the company's most valuable data. And without being able to control the company's most valuable data, they also lost the ability to control the interface. And so mobile technology has had a really hard time being adopted across the enterprise because instead of investing in the next generation of technology for our employees, we made our employees invest in their own technology. That's going to be an issue that pops its head up, and bring your own device will wander its way towards the chopping block because you have much better control over your enterprise when you control all of its transactional data. And you can only do that if you're the one who owns the equipment.
Nice. If we were going to have a conference, create a conference, how would we organize such a conference?
Well, I'm giving some ideas, but they probably are not appropriate for this venue. So. One of the things that I'm really sure of that has been true since the dawn of social media and probably before that is that when you go to a conference, what you see in a conference are people who look like experts, and then there's everybody else at the conference. And the truth is that the people who are not on the stage are often better informed about the topic than the person who's on the stage is. Right? So I think the next generation of conferences are going to be small, they're going to be local, and they're going to feature the fact that in your town there are generally people who are way smart about any topic that you want to have inside of a conference, and that the best way to make a conference work is to focus on building that sort of stuff out. And then you bring in the pinch hitters and home run players for the big slots. So in terms of content and programming, I think things get very local. The subject matter is interesting. If you look at HR, the money that's being spent at and around conferences is all spent by technology companies. The bulk of what people in HR do has nothing to do with that. So you go to the SHRM National Conference, there isn't even a technology track at the SHRM National Conference, and there's no technology component to the various certificate programs inside of SHRM. There's just technology paying for stuff and then people doing what HR does, and there's this great gap there. The right topic and the right thing to look at is how do we make those things fit together better? Because what's happening is that stuff that doesn't matter is getting automated, while the stuff that occupies most people's work life is still being done the way we did it in the 1950s. So, wearable computing is a big answer to that. Imagine being able to have all of the resources about benefits programs and the HRIS and social media at your fingertips when you go to an employee's desk to have a conversation with them. And it's just right there in your eye. You don't have to take out your phone and look it up. You've got something that's digging that stuff out for you as you have the conversation. That makes people more effective on the job where they work, and that's not the kind of stuff that we think of as talent management today.
Okay, makes sense. So who's someone that you've not worked with, not met, but you're intrigued by and you'd like to work with them or have a conversation with them, et cetera, in 2014?
So I've had little bits of conversation with there are three or four interesting companies who are in data visualization, right? So there's Mike Senk over at Equifax, and there are the people at Vizier, and I just talked to the people at Qualtrics last week. Brian Kelly at Mercer is doing some interesting stuff. And the future of a lot of our work has to do with being able to digest, understand, and visualize big chunks of data. And I haven't really worked a big project with anybody in that space, and all of those people are smart, and the problem is really tough. So it would be a good deal of fun to go dig into that, because we don't have one of Mike Senka's big breakthroughs is a simple graph that allows you to see your entire work group and their performance over multiple quarters, right? So you can see the fives that stayed fives and the twos that became fours and the fives that became twos across the organization. So you get a sense of not what's their score today, but how do they do over time? And what you know is that the fives who stay fives, while they're interesting, they're never going to give you innovation because these are people who know how to fill out the form properly. The fives who become twos and then become fives again are people who work, fail, get back up, and succeed again, and they demonstrate resilience, and you want to understand how to capitalize on them because they're the people who can show you how to bring your low performers into high performance. But you can't do what the assessment companies all suggest, that what you do is you go and find your fives and you model all of your assessment material around the fives. And there's nothing that'll get you a mediocre company faster than that. If you go find the fives who got divorced and screwed up for a while and then restored their performance, then you've got a workforce to be contended with, because those are people who the organization has cared for, who did great work, had an interruption in the great work, and then came back to do great work again. And so those are the people you want to be able to find. We don't have tools until this very simple thing that Mike came up with to see that stuff, to get that, to ferret that data out. And that idea that what you're looking for is the behavior of all of the elements of the group over time in a way that, you've seen a lot of this contemporary visualization. It all looks like a pulsating hairball, and it doesn't tell you anything. Mike is pioneering the delivery of visualizations that tell you new stuff, give you new insights about organizations. The folks at Vizier are doing it. There's a small HR group at Tableau who's a great visualization company. So that's who I want to work with.
Nice. Advice that you would give to technology companies giving you a demo and or a briefing, what would that advice be?
Please don't walk me through the process of using your software. A demo is not an exercise in showing how you get a new field into a database. A demo, what I like to see in a demo is I like to start with the story of the company, where the money comes from, and then a picture of the total functionality of the company. So what does your tool do? What's its broad reach? Show me the bits and pieces inside of that. And then let's talk about where you think the powerful differentiators are inside of your story and inside of your functionality, because I'm interested in a demo in finding the place where your company hooks to a customer. Right? And it doesn't hook to a customer in the details of usage. And in a technology demo, anybody can fake that crap. Right? I can fake that crap. So it's better to have a picture of what the company does and what the software is supposed to do and an authentic conversation about where the challenges and opportunities are inside of that. That's what I like to do in a demo.
Hey, John, if there's one thing that you can tell then, you know, the vendor community out there to change their sales process and start doing, just one thing to consistently do, what would that be?
Oh, that's easy. Go look at your competitors' websites and make a list of the 50 most commonly used words on your competitors' websites and stop saying that stuff. Stop it, right? The problem in the HR technology marketplace is nobody can tell the difference between the players. And nobody can tell the difference between the players because it's a game of follow the monkey. So the first monkey gets some buzzwords right, and it looks different from what everybody else is doing, and 6 months later, everybody's doing what the first monkey did. Instead of clearly identifying who your targets are, clearly identifying what the real value is to those people, and demonstrating the fact that you have an allergy to buzzwords. That's how you make a difference in the marketplace. And there's just not a lot of that. There's a lot of Me Too crap out there right now.
Yeah, and the what's interesting about that is it sounds pretty simple, right?
No, it isn't. It isn't simple at all. But it sounds simple, doesn't it?
It does. It's like just wake up today, go out there, find the 75 websites, make a list, give it to everybody, and say, don't say this stuff. Come up with new ways to present how we can actually solve some of the problems out there.
It's hard work. It's really, really hard work, and part of the reason it's hard work is there's a shortage of HR experience in the vendor community. Part of the reason that it's hard work is that companies spend big budget on getting the engineering right, but the actual most important engineering that a company does is the engineering of marketing. The engineering of the information envelope so that when somebody comes to you, what they get is a story that's meaningful to them, that's a gateway to using the product. Instead, it's this, and this is technology companies in general, but in our marketplace in specific, you got a lot of technology companies who think that the value is obvious. And the value is never obvious. Mostly if you are a buyer, there is so much conflicting, repetitive information that you're like a deer in the headlights. They're just overwhelmed with sameness, and you have to depend on the kindness of strangers to even begin to tell the difference. The world's really pretty ripe for something that objectifies some of the performance of tools themselves and the companies that support them. I would expect that you'd see something like that this year, I think.
Where do you see, from a marketing perspective, where do you see shock value kind of playing into differentiating, getting people's attention?
I think it's overrated, right? So you got a deer in the headlights. Honking the horn at a deer in the headlights doesn't make the deer move, right? And that's the shock value idea, is that well, if we can't really differentiate, we'll do something that's so outrageous that people will know us by our outrageousness. And it doesn't really work. It's not a sustainable approach, because what you want is for the deer to come to you and eat out of your hand, not to scare it even more. So if you want to use aggressive, scary marketing tactics, you've got to have a long game. You can use them in year one, and then you need to soften your approach so that people aren't scared of you. Right, because when people are scared, they don't buy.
Yeah, it turns out, and also if you tell them they're stupid, they don't buy as well. Hey, back to your note on demos.
That's stupid, William. That's so stupid.
Yeah, right. back to your note on demos and briefings. One of the things I force people to do is I won't look at their technology until they tell me a story, and so I think demos are actually a crutch. So, and I think people that want to highlight all the different bells and whistles, features, benefits, and attributes of their software, it's just a big giant crutch. So I won't even look at technology until I've had a 30, 45-minute, hour-long discussion with them. And I just want them to tell me a story, because if they can tell me a compelling story, then there's probably a high chance that they might be able to tell a prospect a story. But if they can't, I don't care what the software does. if it can't articulate a story that I want to root for them, I want to fall in love with them, and if they can't tell me that story, then none of those features are going to. And again, that's just me speaking. I'm going to steal that.
That's perfect. That's exactly right.
We've only got about 2 minutes left, but I want to get your take on analysts. You know, the state of the market as we look at it right now, it doesn't seem like there's any great analysts kind of coming up. The 18-year-old HCM analysts aren't being pumped out of high school, et cetera. What do you think about the market as it currently exists, and how do you think we should grow or harvest analysts?
So analyst, I'm not sure that very many people know what an analyst is. An analyst is somebody who helps companies understand their problem and sort through the tools that might be useful to solve that problem, right? And so analysts come at it in a whole array of approaches, from the broad look at the entire marketplace with specific companies being examples in a big market picture story, to the actual implementation of programs inside of companies, and so the range is pretty big. The range is pretty big. What's changed in the last 10 years is it used to be that only an analyst could have the capacity to call around and ask people about their company. And now somebody who works for you can do that job and go dig into websites and find out what's out there in the market and ask people in forums what's out there in the market. And it's just going to get more crowdsourced. The business of understanding what your choices are and how to make them is going to get more and more crowdsourced. The analyst companies have business models that assume that people are idiots and can't figure stuff out on their own. And so the traditional analysts are going to be under extraordinary economic pressure, and will probably disappear more or less. That doesn't mean that there isn't going to be a really important place for people who can help guide decision-making. and have an idea of how to envision what optimal performance for your organization and its HR department is, right? And so I imagine that the role of analyst, which I think of as a Sherpa, is going to change to have more overt leadership involved in it, because a lot of the dirt under the fingernail details of being an analyst are going to be crowdsourced.
Well, John, thank you. Perfect. Great answer on that, and thank you for coming on and spending lunch with us again. Good way to kick off 2014. We are out of time. So I would like to wish you a fantastic rest of the day. Please also tell Heather, your employment attorney, that we said hello, and to keep cranking out content that is epic as always. So.
Hey, thanks. It was a lot of fun.
Perfect. We will talk to you very soon. Everybody, have a good rest of the day. Drinking a German beer.